All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled, episode 186. It is Friday, April 7th, 11:30 a.m. West Coast, daylight savings time. Deborah, are you there?
Yes,
How's it
I
going?
am here. I am here. It's going just fine. I'm looking out at the rain again, but they tell me spring is coming, so I'm holding
Yeah.
on. I know it's not, I don't really have much to complain about compared to the Pacific Northwest, but
Yeah, it's a torrential
I
rain
still do.
here. So, my internet is a little bit unstable. So if I freeze up, just let me know. I'll pause. We'll wait for it to come back. But other than that,
Okay.
everything's going as good as possible for the circumstances around here. Yeah, it's muddy, it's wet. At least it's not cold anymore. It's in the 50s, so warm, balmy, 52 in torrential rain right now. So, yeah, the creek's really flowing. Like I said, if anybody listened to my last show that I did yesterday, we don't need to do a big homestead report because I did it there, but yeah, it's wet and squishy. I redid the driveway on Tuesday, so I had like 15 yards of gravel delivered, and so there's no potholes on the driveway, but it's definitely a skill being able to do that with a tractor, and I'm not quite there yet. So there's water accumulating in the yard, and I don't know what I can do about it, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, what can you do about it?
Yeah, we're gonna dig some French drains out in the pasture this summer. And hopefully that will remedy our wet pasture situation. But other than that, yeah, I'm just kind of doing stuff around the house today and gonna go run some errands. Gotta get this we're gonna try to plant a garden this year. We're not gonna attempt to do like this gigantic huge garden. I think we're going to put a lot of our energy and effort towards livestock more than gardening. The people that I know that have big, huge gardens don't do that. So, hopefully we can meet some people and grow enough food for what we need and trade other stuff for vegetables and things like that. So,
Cool. You had good luck with the garden in your old place.
yeah, I mean, stuff
That was great.
grows really well here. So yeah, I'm going to go price out some lumber today and budget out building some raised boxes and stuff like that. Just do it that way. Yeah, I think I can give myself like $1,000 to make it happen, and hopefully that'll do it
Yeah.
for everything and get
You
stuff
gonna build
done.
another greenhouse?
Yeah, I'd like to build a greenhouse too, but that's a whole other project, and I've already got 20 projects on the list, more than 20, never ending projects. So
Yeah.
we'll see what happens. Yeah, it's just hard to find time to do stuff outside right now because it's so wet, but life's good. New bottle babies are doing really well. I just fed them. They're really, really cute.
Is I heard Margot was able to nurse a little bit.
Yeah, Emily keeps trying to push this thing. I don't you can train your sheep. You can try to get orphan sheep to nurse off of another mom. The lambs are all up for it usually, but it's the getting the moms to let them do it. So
Yeah.
I don't have a problem feeding them with a bottle. It's working out fine. It sucks. I have to wake up at 3 in the morning to do it, and then I have a hard time getting back to bed. But it's just part of the deal. I did it at 3 last night or this morning, and was able to fall back asleep. It's just,
Oh, good.
usually I get up with Emily in the morning and help her get ready to get to work and load up her car and make her coffee or tea and stuff like that. But I told her if I'm going to get up in the middle of the night, which is my job to do, I can't do as much for her in the morning, so.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
Totally fair. How long do they need to be nursed or bottle fed?
Like 8 weeks, I think.
Oh, okay.
But as they get older, we'll let them out. They start eating food, like messing around with grass and hay. At least just kind of chewing on it, maybe not even eating it all the way, but like putting it in their mouths. Am I
Uh-huh.
broken up? Yeah, they'll usually start eating food, and so yeah, we'll just play it by ear. It's just like I said on the last show, if you look it up on the internet, you're gonna find a thousand different ways to do it, and we're gonna figure out our own way. So
Yeah, whatever works best.
yeah, but because it's been so busy out here, I have been off of the news
Oops,
cycle.
you're frozen. You're frozen.
I can hear you. See, when can you hear me now?
Okay.
So Deborah,
Yeah.
when I freeze up, it's still good on my end. So don't say you're frozen a whole bunch of
Okay.
times because it still comes through on the recording, my voice. Just give me a second and I'll pause and I'll wait for you to come back. Okay.
Okay.
All right, guys. Yeah, sorry guys, we're having a hard time with the internet connection right now, but we're gonna try to figure it out. But like I was saying, since it's been so busy out here, the news cycle has not been something that I have been paying attention to. I've been very limited time on the phone and social media where I get most of my news and stories from. And I've been listening to books on tape. I'm kind of bored with my regular podcast rotation, so I'm trying to branch out. And yeah, just been busy, and it's good. It's good for your mental health to not be bogged down in all this garbage, and it kind of gives you
It's
a
true.
perspective on what's really happening when you do catch up with it and how important it is in your life. And it's not very important in my life right now, but I'm still entertained by it, and that's kind of the deal with the show, is that we're supposed to tell people our thoughts on stuff. What has your relationship been with the news lately?
Just that it just I'm sick of it. I'm just sick of everything.
Yeah.
It's just, you know.
Yeah, are you watching cable news still?
A little bit, but
Yeah.
flipping back and forth. Like I did watch CNN to hear Trump's speech when he got back to Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
And flipped around a little bit to get everybody's perspective on that.
Yeah, this whole deal is there's so much stuff going on with it, and it's just meant to confuse you. It's also meant to make I can see it clear as day. It's meant to make do what the 20, his whole presidency did to people like me, is to force people like me to defend him, even though I don't like him, you know? So
What can you defend about him, though? Just, I mean, like, what does he need defending? What?
well, just the fact that he is being, prosecuted for this thing that's a nothing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, 34 counts that all reads this. I mean, or counts read the same.
Okay, go ahead.
I was saying that, you know, all 34 of the counts read the same to me.
What is it? What are they?
Oh,
Just
you know, money, you know, what do they call it? Irregularities, or I don't know what they call it.
yeah, I've heard a bunch of people explain what's going on, and how in every other court it would be thrown out, or, you know, it would be a small fine, a misdemeanor. It's something that,
right.
like all politicians do, gets brought up. You know, the Bill Clinton paid Paula Jones like $800,000, and they all do it. They all cheat on guys. They all rape women. They all do it, and then they all pay them off. It's just something that happens. Yeah, it's just, and then, you know, exactly what just happened to me is saying like, oh, well, you know, if we're going to prosecute ex-presidents for crimes that they did, we can go back through the list. Dave Smith from the Part of the Problem podcast did a great job a while back of just going through the crimes of every president of his lifetime, which started Ronald Reagan in 1980, like crimes, like real crimes. And it's all war crime stuff. And they're all guilty. Mm-hmm. They should all be thrown under the jail for war crimes. The fact that they're getting Donald Trump on this, you know, him paying off a porn star
who does not believe he should be jailed. Stormy Daniels says she doesn't think he should be jailed.
I mean, she's a garbage person too, obviously. You know, she ended up having to, it's just such a strange world that I don't know. It's like these guys just cheat on their wives and then they get lawyers involved. They sign non-disclosure agreements, so they're not supposed to talk about it. It just seems crazy to me that that's a legal tactic that you can do after infidelity, you know?
Yeah.
It's so stupid. And just like, these are the people that, you know, are supposedly supposed to be ruling us. But I think this is all just theater. I think it's all part of the game. I think, you know, whether people are involved with it or not, I think it's the long game leading up to this next election cycle, which is, you know, I think pretty much started, right?
Yeah.
And what are your predictions of what will happen with this whole deal with Trump and these indictments, accusations?
He has another case starting, or arraignment coming up on the rape charges that took place back, I think, in the 80s or 90s with, her name is E. Jean, and I can't think of the last name right now. He supposedly raped her in the dressing room at Bloomingdale's. And he denies. But anyway, that's coming up for arraignment.
Is that crazy lady?
She's got short blonde hair. She doesn't, I don't know. I haven't seen her look crazy.
There was one during his presidency that they had on Anderson Cooper, and she had been like, she got like on the air somehow, and then it started talking, and Anderson Cooper was like, oh no, this lady's crazy. Like, she said like rape is sexy and stuff like that. I don't know if you remember that. I'll send it to you.
Yeah, there was another woman on the airplane. I don't know which is which, but
yeah, this woman, I think she was like a clerk at a department store.
Okay, no, this the woman I mentioned at Bloomingdale's,
or she was just some woman he was out on a date with, and he took her to a department store to buy stuff for her. Because that's probably what he did. He probably met these girls, took them on shopping sprees, and then like tried to throw it to them in the dressing room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one, she was helping him shop for someone else. So it could be the same person. I don't know.
I mean, it's probably, you know, that was probably the game that he just did all the time. So maybe it's a different one, but it sounds pretty similar to what that woman described.
Yeah.
But,
it's a mess. It's just,
And then just all the crossover between like, whether they're the campaign finance stuff, whether it's federal or state or local. And then this guy, Alvin Bragg, who is a Soros funded DA, and now like they're doing, saying Soros funded is now the new like version of the old Rothschilds trick, where like people bring up the Rothschilds, like what happened when we did it with you way back in the day, and you said, oh, the let's anti-Semitic. So that's what's happening with when you bring up George Soros funded stuff now. People are saying like, oh, that's anti-Semitic. That's conspiracy theory, anti-Semitic stuff. So, and it's like they're saying, oh, he's not direct. George Soros didn't meet him and give him an envelope full of money. He doesn't do that for anybody. It's all through all these other organizations, but he funds all those organizations. I think it's like if you start some sort of leftist leaning nonprofit or something, I think it's pretty easy to get $1 million from George Soros. So his fingerprints are all over it.
Yeah, I got to read up more on him.
Yeah, we could do a whole group episode. The funny thing about that is, well, that's not funny, but like he went on 60 Minutes and talked about how when he was a teenager, it was during the Holocaust. He's a Jewish guy, and he was hidden by a German family, but he went out and helped hunt down, I guess not, Jewish families and reported on them and stuff. And I don't, you can't you go back to that situation. You can't blame like a 14-year-old kid for having to do that to survive. But it's weird because on 60 Minutes he like says like I forget who the reporter is, but they say like, wow, that's enough to put somebody in the mental institute, And he says something to the effect that he looks back on it fondly as the best time of his life.
I have to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be one thing if somebody was like, I was a 14-year-old kid. I didn't know the
And
gravity of the situation, and I was doing what I had to do to survive.
to
I
survive,
feel
stay
horrible
alive.
about it. It weighs on my soul every day. There's, maybe some deaths that I'm complicit in, even though I didn't have a choice. That would be a normal response
Yes.
to that. Not
Yeah.
saying that it's the best time of your life. But yeah, he's a lizard person. He's very, very old. He's not really running anything anymore. It's his son. I think his son's name is Alexander Soros. At one time, I used to listen to this comedian's podcast. This guy Andrew Santino. I don't listen to really any comedian podcasts anymore after the last election because they all went retarded. But he was saying that he was at some party or something with that guy's son, Alexander Soros, who runs it all now. And they wanted to like barbecue and get some more bottles of booze. So they were going to send somebody to the store, and he was like, oh, I'll pay for it. And they were like, yeah, we need like 10. We want to get like 10 rib eyes and like, some bottles of vodka or something. And he said that guy like pulled like a wad of like thousands and thousands of dollars out of his pocket and just gave it to someone and like had no clue like what that should have cost. Should have been like, $300 or something like that, maybe if you're in the city where stuff's expensive. And he had no clue that it didn't cost $5,000 for 10 rib eyes and a couple bottles of vodka. Yeah. But let's see here. Let's do a little screen share. I got a little bit of footage from some legal experts, our favorite legal expert and listener of the show, Alan Dershowitz. Are you familiar with Alan
Oh,
Dershowitz?
yeah.
Big fan?
Not so much.
Yeah, I don't know why this guy is still able to be consulted. This guy admits to getting massaged at Epstein's Island. He says he left his underwear on.
Oh, good.
Said
Yeah.
he
I took a
acknowledged,
puff, but I didn't inhale.
yeah, he acknowledges that it was underage girls, but says he left his underwear on, And this guy's, he's super, he goes and he also debates people from the pro-vaccine side, which is strange. And yeah, I don't know why he is an authority still. It's very, very strange. But here's him on Fox Business talking about his opinion, and he was Trump's former attorney, right? And he's still a big time leftist, but he can't get, I don't think the left-leaning media wants to talk to him because he was Trump's attorney. So let's see what he has to say. This is a 3 minute and 45 second clip. We'll just listen to the whole thing.
Okay. Harvard Law professor
Can you
Emory
hear?
and author of Get
Yes.
Trump, The Threat to Civil Liberties, Due Process, and Our Constitutional Rule of Law, Alan Dershowitz. Alan, good morning to you. So many questions for you. Let's start with the legal side before we get to the politics of this. So again, the indictment is not.
He doesn't look like a guy that would get massaged by an underage girl at all, does he?
No, he looks like a nice grandpa.
He looks like a just he looks like a demon to me.
Until it's unsealed, we don't specifically know what's in it. But the thinking is that he's going to go after the former president for falsifying business records. That is a misdemeanor. To elevate that to a felony, he has to prove that President Trump had an intent to defraud. Your thoughts on what the legal side of this is so far?
Start with the most likely felony that's been committed in this case. And that is if somebody on the grand jury, prosecutor, grand juror, leaked the fact that there was a vote to indict, that is a 1 to 5 year Class E felony under New York. So Bragg now has a prima facie case that a crime has been committed right in his building. But as far as I know, he's not investigating it. Now, we don't know who did the leak. It's conceivable it could have been done to somebody in the Trump administration, but I doubt it because they seem to have been taken by great surprise. So the most likely source of the leak is someone from within Bragg's office or within the grand jury. That's where the focus ought to be, because there you have a crime and then you try to find out who committed the crime. It's the opposite of what happened in the Trump case. In the Trump, they say, let's get Trump. The title of my book, Get Trump, comes from the campaign pledges of the district attorney and the attorney general of New York. Let's get Trump. We'll figure out what crimes there might be after we get elected. They get elected. They spend years searching for crimes.
Sure.
They find. So they make up a fake misdemeanor about corporate records. Then they try to piggyback a federal felony on that. Now, again, we don't know what's in the indictment. That'll probably get leaked too by the same person who leaked the fact that there was a vote. So until we know what's in the indictment, we can't know for sure. But from everything we know now, this looks like the weakest case in modern history. And when you have a Democrat who had run for office on the campaign to get Trump, and he's trying to indict the man who's about to run against the head of the Democratic Party, namely President Joe Biden, you better have a slam dunk case. Now, we don't know whether there's a slam dunk case, but from everything we know, this seems like an extraordinarily weak case and an extraordinary abuse of prosecutorial discretion. But let's keep an open mind, wait and see what the indictment says. But in the meantime, there should be an investigation of the, was there a leak? And if so, who did the leaking?
Okay, I don't have a lot of time left, but real quick, President Trump has responded on Truth Social. He says, they only brought this fake, corrupt, and disgraceful charge against me because I stand with the American people. They know I cannot get a fair trial in New York. Alan, real quick, can he get a fair trial in New York?
Absolutely not. Do you think any juror or judge is going to want to come home to his family and friends and say, I'm the man who freed Trump and allowed him to run to become the next president of the United States?
Sure.
What happened to me, this vineyard where I lost all of my friends because I defended Trump in the Senate, is only a small version of what would happen to any judge or juror who acquitted Trump. So no, this case has to be moved to Staten Island or to upstate New York, somewhere where there's a possibility of getting a fair trial. Manhattan is not such a place.
Staten Island getting thrown out there is a possible location as well. Alan Dershowitz, thank you so much for being here. Which I want to bring in to react to.
Yeah, maybe his friends and family don't like him anymore because he's allegedly on a pedophile island getting massaged by underage girls, you know, but who knows? There's this woman, Kim Iverson, who's pretty awesome. She used to be on that independent news station called The Hill. Hill Rising. It's a big YouTube news show that's supposed to be like, you know, moderate on both sides, but they're just controlled as everybody else. And they interviewed Fauci on the show that she was on, and like the couple days leading up to before they were going to have him on, she got like fired for all intents and purposes, because they knew that she was the one that was going to like hold his feet to the fire.
So and, what's the why?
But here I'll finish. She just interviewed him. I think they played it on No Agenda or OBDM. I can't remember which one, but she asks Dershowitz about Epstein, and he's like, he gets super mad. He goes, "Do you usually ambush your guests on the show with questions that have no basis, that haven't been cleared with my team?" And she's like, "Oh, they were cleared with your team. I told them I was going to ask them this," and she has like the receipts to prove it. And then at the end, he's like, I think she mentioned something like, "Thank you for coming on the show." And he's just like, "Well, this is the last time I'll ever be on your show, so you better make these last seconds count." Like, that's how he ends it. But yeah, so he says it's a nothing burger, but there's probably a chance that he would be convicted because of where the trial's being held. And if they get it out to Staten Island, which is like heavily red Trump country, I think, who knows. But my kind of opinion on this whole thing is, are the Democrats trying to run Joe Biden again? Is he going to do it?
Robert Kennedy Jr.
Well, he's not. Yeah, he's announced that he's going to run, but he's not being endorsed by the Democratic National
Committee. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I think he is. I think Biden is going to run again. And I think the only way that he could ever be reelected is if he's running against Trump. Because it was very easy to steal the election from him last time. Everybody hates him. You know, it's such a divisive issue. And then they're going to have him just tied up in court battles the whole time that he's supposed to be campaigning.
Right.
And so I think the play here is, because you know, they always said like, remember when they raided Mar-a-Lago, and this was just a horrible strategy on the Democratic side, because it emboldened and made him more, his base made him more popular with them.
Yeah.
If this makes him more popular, then he will be the candidate, and it'll be super easy to steal it from him. Because the only time Donald Trump can ever win anything in court, he's a loser. The only thing he ever wins in court is when he's, you know, not paying these poor contractors who worked on his business, and he just ties them up in court and makes them go bankrupt because they can't afford the legal fees, and they have to eat, you know, these, you know, small businesses eating $1 million contracts that, you know, some guy who got contracted to put the windows in at one of his buildings or something like that. That's what he does, you know. That's the only thing he can win in court, but he can't win anywhere else. But that's my opinion. That's
his base. If he didn't even go out and campaign,
yeah,
his base would still be there for him.
Yes.
I don't know that anybody's going to change their opinion for or against him.
Right. Yeah. It's already set in stone. Like, they don't need to have like debates anymore. Like, it would be for anybody, you know. They should have, the only thing that makes sense to have debates ever would be in a primary.
Yeah.
But like, when it comes down to the two candidates for the presidency, like, there's nobody that's undecided anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody knows.
Yeah.
They're either going to do their party line or, yeah. Nobody's going to.
And, you know, I don't think DeSantis is a serious candidate for this term, because nobody wants to run against Donald Trump because he humiliates people and ruins their political careers. I mean, look what he did to Marco Rubio and Jeb Bush and all these people. DeSantis can just hang back and be the king of Florida, which is a better position for him. I mean, he did great, great stuff there during the
pandemic.
Yeah. And then he can just wait for this next one to, I mean, Trump's not going to be too old the next time around. And then he could, you know, maybe do something then. Who knows? This is all just speculation, and also speculating that any of this stuff is for real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all going to turn out how it's going to turn out regardless.
Yeah.
Of anything that we do.
Here I got a little bit on who Alvin Bragg is, and he's that good.
Yeah.
So it's just a quick blurb, nothing too crazy, but we can kind of glean some things from it. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has been investigating former President Trump over hush money payments made leading up to the 2016 presidential election. On Tuesday, a Manhattan grand jury... Oh, okay, never mind. That's all done. So who is Alvin Bragg? Born in Harlem, New York, Bragg is the 37th district attorney elected in Manhattan and the first Black Manhattan district attorney in the history of the office. That's a little bit surprising. He took over for retiring district attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. and is the fourth elected district attorney in Manhattan in the last 8 decades. So these guys get the job and hold on to it for a long time. 20-year job.
Yeah.
Maybe more, because if it's been 80 years and he's the fourth. So Bragg's office prosecutes nearly all criminal cases in Manhattan and is staffed by about 500 lawyers. Previously, he served as an assistant attorney general at the New York State Attorney General's office and as an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. Bragg ended his service in the state attorney general's office as the chief deputy attorney general. After his government service and before being sworn in as district attorney, isn't district attorney government service?
Maybe it's state versus federal.
Yeah, who knows? Bragg was a visiting professor of law and co-director of the Radical Justice Project at New York Law School.
Racial.
He's got the whole, yep, you know it. He's got the whole social justice agenda on lock. Racial justice.
Yeah.
I said radical.
Mm-hmm.
Same difference. He represented Eric Garner's mother and sister in a lawsuit against New York City seeking key details regarding the 2014 chokehold death of Garner. Bragg earned his Bachelor's of Arts from Harvard University and a law degree from Harvard Law School. He clerked for Judge Robert P. Patterson Jr. in the Southern District of New York. So it seems like this guy has been groomed for the job. And if he could, he's a big fat guy. If he could, I mean, this is gold to him if he can get a conviction in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine what this does for his political career.
Yeah.
He'll never lose the job as Manhattan DA, and it will open doors for him to probably make a lot of money doing other things.
Yep. He'll write a book.
Yeah, he'll write a book. He'll retire from the DA, and he'll go be the legal analyst for MSNBC or things like that. You see it every time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's all we got for that stuff. I think it's like everything else, meant to divide, inflame, enrage, and separate everybody and into different little camps. And, you know, this is all just kind of the first act of the election cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So
the smokescreen cycle.
Yeah. Well, do you have any stories?
I do. I have one from Catholic Vote is the media or whatever. Okay, and according to them, the CV, Catholic Vote, American values are evaporating. And a Wall Street Journal survey released this week confirms, or last week, confirms Americans have abandoned their values that once defined our nation. The poll surveyed over 1,000 people, pulling from a diversity of demographics and political affiliations. On the topic of patriotism, this has declined sharply since 1998. At that time, 70% of those polled judged love of country to be very important. Today, only 38% of the people agreed with this. The rate of decline has accelerated, as you might guess, in the last 4 years. Between 1998 and 2019, patriotism was still important, only dropping from 70 to 60%. But between 2019 and 2023, it dropped 23 percentage points. And then on the topic of, religion and children. In 1998, 59% of those polled said that having children was very important in the recent survey. Only 30% said having children was important. For young adults, only 31% said religion is important, and only 23% say having children is important.
That's a scary statistic right there.
Isn't it?
I wonder what age group was the 23%?
Young adults is all it said.
Okay, so it's not like teenagers, it's young adults. So yes. That's probably, you know,
18 to 35 or something. Yeah. These numbers indicate a loss of hope for the future. That's damning. 78% of participants say that they do not feel confident that the life of our children's generation will be better than it has been for us. And the only value that saw gains was money. Democrats and Republicans had a wide difference of opinion on questions regarding gender identity, race, pronoun mandates, and values in general. 45% of each party believe money is very important. Mm-hmm. And there is a decline in civility. Tolerance has dropped to 58% today from 80% in 2019.
Civility,
being civil, being kind, being civil to each other.
Well, they're saying, is it important to be civil to others, even if they're not the same as you or the same?
Just civility, civility in general, just being a good human being.
And 58% of young adults think it is not important.
It has dropped to 58% from 80%. Yeah. 80% of the people in 2019 thought it was important to be kind to one another and tolerant.
42% of people think that it's not important to be kind and tolerant.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, those people would probably say, you know, racial tolerance is the most important thing in the world. Racial tolerance, we're going to get into this in a minute too, trans rights, things like that. But if someone is a Republican or religious person or something like that, it's not important to be civil towards them.
They didn't separate Democrats and Republicans in civility.
Well, that's just my speculation on who that 42%.
Yeah, that would make sense. And there are reasons that could be contributing. Obviously, the 9/11 attack, the recession in 2008. This is according to the Wall Street Journal, the rise of former President Trump are some of the reasons cited. And the director of CatholicVotes.org, a man by the name of Josh Merker, and the Catholic Vote says it's America's top Catholic advocacy organization. So this guy Merker said that we should remember that the darkest times are when faithful are called to be more bold in proclaiming the truths of our faiths, not less. Should I repeat that?
Sure.
The darkest times are when faithful are called to be more bold in proclaiming the truths of our faiths, not less. So we need to be more bold in our...
Yeah, that's what he's saying.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the hard, it's harder and harder right now to do that, because it will get you put on lists. It'll get you, you know, persecuted, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah.
That's what he's saying. So as a non, as a, what we would call you, a secular person, what, mm-hmm. what are your thoughts on that, that statement about the faith?
I think it's a beautiful statement. I really? Think, yeah, yeah. We should remember that the darkest times are when the faithful should be more bold,
mm-hmm.
should be more outspoken about their truths and their beliefs.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's yeah, that's true. And the darkest times happen because people don't do it, because it's hard to do it.
Right. We've seen this time and time again.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a alarming poll. Polls, you know, you can take them with a grain of salt, but that's, I think these ones on young people, and, you know, I'm not going to say anything bad about young people that say, like, I can't have kids, I got tricked. You know, I'm very, very open about it. But if you live in San Francisco, you say, say you just graduated from liberal arts college, Deborah. You weren't lucky enough to have parents who took care of the bill for you. You're $300,000 in debt.
Mm-hmm.
You have a gender studies degree. Your rent's $3,500 a month. Well, you're splitting a $3,500 a month one bedroom apartment with two other people. Maybe you're polyamorous.
San Francisco, sure, yeah. Why not?
Yeah, and you're 23.
Yeah.
You got a gender studies degree or something equivalent to that. Something that you got that's not helping you. I could do it with what I got. I got a degree mm-hmm. in history. Never worked out for me. I didn't want to become a teacher. So you are working at Starbucks, most likely.
Probably.
Or a local bagel shop.
Uh-huh.
Trying to $75 an hour. You're paying rent with 75% of what you got. It's not these kids' fault that they took out these loans.
Mm-hmm.
They did it on their own free will. But imagine all the other stuff that we don't allow 17-year-old kids to do. 17-year-old kids can't go get, if a 17-year-old kid was highly motivated and was like, I don't want to go to college, I want to start a business. You go to the bank, you have a business plan, you're 17, great business plan, you're going to start a business, you need $50,000. You're not getting it.
Right.
You go there and tell them you want to go to college, they'll give you all the money you want in the world, you know,
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
no guarantee on how you're going to pay that back after you're done. You got to pay
right.
it back. You can't declare bankruptcy on that. One of the only things you can't declare bankruptcy on follows you until death.
Yeah.
And goes on to your family if you die. Even if you, you know, medical assistance in death, you know, that's coming out. If you do that, then your parents get to pay for your college again. So big round.
And it's like there's no, nothing in your high school education, as far as I know, gives you the even the spark to do anything other than, what's the word, matriculate to college.
Yeah, it's all a big scam.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's no trade skills yeah. taught any longer.
You know what? You know, it's like if you live in communities like I do, I had to go. I was driving around in Longview the other day and I had to, I made a wrong turn. So I had to turn around in the high school parking lot. Wasn't out there cruising for high school chicks. It was spring break. There's nobody there.
Spring break.
But like right in front, like I saw they had the big building and they still have an auto body shop. And when I go to the farm store in Kelso down the road, like you, you if you're getting like a bale of hay, you have to go around back and they load it up for you. And it's along the frontage road there is the high school, and they have like a pretty big trade section of the high school with gardening, and they have metal shop and all that stuff. So there's still, you know, kind of there. But when you were around, it was in every high school, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was motor shop or woodworking or wood
yeah,
shop.
When I was in high school, they had just gotten rid of the auto body shop.
And for the girl students, I mean, none of the girls could take either of those. And they took a semester of cooking and a semester of sewing.
But they had, I got to take wood shop in high school. I really enjoyed wood shop. So it was pretty fun. But so it's like everybody, it's like the only thing you can do is go to college. And you take it to these inner city schools where like people think I'm the first one in my high school or in my family to graduate high school and go on to college, and that it's going to just be
the end all
everything. And it's not, it's
right.
It's so watered down now. Like when my dad graduated from college in 1966, like that meant that was a big deal. That meant you could go get a good job just from that degree. But now everybody's got it. Everybody's got all this college debt. Nobody wants, like, if you look at any kind of like job listings on Craigslist, you like click on something and it's like advanced degree required starting at $17 an hour, you know, everything. And, it's not a surprise or a mistake that that's happening, you know?
And it used to be when you were finishing college, you were getting scouted by big firms. You know, they were looking for you.
So it's like these people are going to send their kids to college. They come back at Thanksgiving break. They hate your guts. They think you're a racist. Like it's just a mill. It's always been that way. It was originally, you know, the Rockefeller school system based on the Prussian system was to make good soldiers and good factory workers. And now it's to transform your kids into these other foot soldiers for whatever means that they want now. But I don't know how we got there, but yeah.
Do you want something lighthearted now?
Yeah, let me go to the bathroom real quick. I'll be right back.
Okay,
yeah, I'm back. So yeah, just the one point that I would make is like, yeah, if that's your reality as a college graduate, like how are you even gonna think? You're like, I'm never gonna own a house, I'm never gonna do anything.
You're never gonna dig out of debt.
How can I even consider thinking about a family or anything like that? And then we get into the whole thing with, you know, the destruction of the nuclear family and all that stuff. Buck Johnson just did a really good Counterflow podcast, where he had Julie Mastrini on, who is she's been on our show, and they had this guy who was like he's a gay guy who got molested a bunch as a kid by his Catholic priests, you know, by multiple ones in his childhood and teenage years. And then like went to some, he was in the Castro. There's some infamous Catholic church in the Castro that's very gay friendly. And he went to some like kind of conversion-y gay support group thing at that church, and was like, as a guy in his 20s, and was like victimized by the person that was running that, you know,
at the conversion.
It wasn't like it's a very interesting podcast to listen to. It's goes against probably everything that you've been told. They argue against, you know, I was born this way and all this stuff like that. And the guy's Orthodox Christian now and kind of lives an asexual monastic life, but But yeah, he went to this kind of like gay, I want to be, you know, Catholic support group. Yeah. It's like when drug dealers go to AA meetings to meet clients, you know.
Oh God,
that's easiest thing that you can do.
Damn.
It's very, very interesting to listen to, you know. It goes against a lot of things that, like, they talk about a lot of stuff that you know, is just taken for granted these days because of what's been told to us over and over and over again. I don't know really what to think about it, but they bring up a lot of good points and a lot of things. They talk about Father Seraphim Rose, who's a big part of a lot of people like me getting into Orthodoxy, and it's not commonly known, but it is known and out there that guy, he was from Southern California, went to the Bay Area in the 60s, early maybe 50s too, and he was in like the beat scene of North Beach and stuff like that, and was in an openly gay relationship. He was a gay dude and like struggled with his sexuality his whole life, you know, and he's going to be canonized as a Orthodox saint. So it's very, very interesting, complex topic. But yeah, go listen to that Counterflow episode. It's the most recent one. And yeah, what was the point of me saying that?
Because, you know, young people are not able to look at.
A really good point that they had kind of like, that Julie, who was on our show, and she had lived, you know, in San Francisco and had a hard time, a real struggle, like finding someone that wanted to just have a regular, she's heterosexual, wanted to have just a monogamous relationship. And it's like, they made this point that the sort of libertine gay lifestyle that, you know, was happening pre-HIV became so ingrained in culture in San Francisco that like straight people in cities are behaving in that manner as far as like relationships go these days.
Meaning not looking for monogamy.
Yeah, no monogamy, no marriage. Multiple partners, and then if you are monogamous, like not having having open relationships, bringing other people in, things like that. So that's all, you know, I can attest to that. That's very, very commonplace.
And they even have TV shows about it.
Yeah,
looking for sister wife, looking for brother husband.
Really? I know the sister wife show, but wasn't that like about Mormons?
Well, yes, but now they have shows where I've never watched them. So I've seen ads look, you know, like here's a married couple and, you know, they decide they want to bring in another woman, another wife. And now they have new recent ads for couples where the wife wants to bring in another husband.
Yeah.
Looking for sister wife, looking for brother husband.
Cucks. Well, they're all cucks. Yeah, and I remember once your other daughter was down visiting us, and she was talking to us about someone that she knows who was kind of like having a hard time and with relationships and stuff, and was kind of experimenting around in that world. And I remember your daughter, not Emily, but your other daughter saying like, you know, I want to be supportive of her and tell her like, you know, anything that you do, that's your decision, and you know, we support you in it. And I think like as someone's friend, like you got to be like, that's not good. Like that's never going to work out well for anybody. Look at the people that do it. None of them are happy. No, very, very small percentage of people, in my opinion, can pull that off. And I think the people that say that they are lying, you know, that's just my opinion. I could never ever imagine sharing the person that I love more than anything in the world with someone else.
Definitely not. However, I do have to say that I disagree with, I personally know a number of gay couples, same-sex couples that are, you know, devoted to each other and appear to be happy. And I can't fault him for that. I don't know. It just, I think you and I have a different perspective on that.
Right. But yeah, I think when you're talking about the other thing that, like, you don't have to, if you're really friends with someone and you have a strong opinion, you don't have to support something that you don't agree with. You can tell them mm-hmm. your opinion if you think that's, you know, mm-hmm. it's going to help them. So yeah, but so what's the fun thing you got here?
Oh, okay. Let's see. Let me find it in my notes here. All right. This is from NPR. Okay. Lots of kids are brought into emergency rooms after swallowing Legos. We all know kids swallow everything. So a doctor by the name of Andy Tagg, who is an emergency physician in Melbourne, they say Melbourne.
Yeah, that's so stupid. I hate it when people that are from there try to say one word in that accent. Like when you're talking to, it's like when the you know, the stereotypical Mexican American news anchor or news reporter talks like a normal person and then immediately code switches when there's like anything with a Melbourne, Australia. If you're an American person, say
Melbourne.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
it's like, you know, Deborah, I think maybe in a couple of years, Emily and I are going to have a second honeymoon and we're going to go to Paris.
I do have to say that my husband, when he's from the South, he's from Louisiana, where they say Lafayette. And here in California, we say Lafayette. But for the longest time, when I first met him, he would say San Rafael.
Yeah, he still says that, doesn't he? I've heard him say that. So everybody, if everybody knows, there's a town in Marin County where Deborah lives called San Rafael.
Rafael.
But that's, you know, you can look at it that way. That's not the proper pronunciation either.
Uh-huh. Well, how do you say Worcestershire? That's not pronounced correct either.
Yeah.
Worcestershire. Something. Yeah. Anyway, like, I digress.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So this emergency room doctor in Melbourne, Australia, says he treats many anxious parents who bring in their young children for this reason. He, as a child, swallowed two Lego pieces, which were stuck together. And like the majority of children who swallow Legos, he passed the object within a couple of days, none the worse for wear. But he wondered if there was a way to spare parents from worry and stress. So he recruited five other pediatric doctors, thought there may be a way to alleviate the concern through science. So what did they do? They devised an experiment and published, let me turn this page here, published the results. Each of them swallowed a Lego head. They wanted to basically see how long it took to swallow and excrete a plastic toy. Said Sabrina Imbler, who wrote about this experiment for The Defector, she recently sat down with shortwave scientists to chart the journey of the six Lego heads and what came out on the other side. The study used this criteria: no previous gastrointestinal surgery, the ability to ingest a foreign object, and an aversion to searching through fecal matter. Those were the three criteria that could get you booted from this study. And then researchers then measured how long it took for the Lego heads to be passed. The time interval was given, this is good, you'll really like this, a found and retrieved time, FART,
yeah,
FART score, and the average time was 1.71 days, and the results were published in the Journal of Pediatrics Child Health. However, I have this one thing to say about this. The Lego heads are rounded.
Right.
They're not square, right angles.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is a fair study.
An accurate study. Not at all.
Not at all. But they tried.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe maybe you could do your own study and give us the results.
I don't think so.
I wonder if how many parents go to the emergency room from stepping on Legos in the
middle. Oh my God. Yeah. That's yeah. Did you have Legos?
I did have Legos. I had Duplos before Legos.
Yeah, I remember Duplos. Those were
for the little kids. I really liked, I had like wooden blocks. I had a whole block set that I really, really liked playing with. Never did got real big into Legos. But when I used to have a stepson, I loved doing Legos with him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of ended up with just like me building everything and like telling him to hand me stuff.
But you were doing it together.
Yeah.
It's a good project.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's some very interesting news. And yeah, let's get back into the seriousness of our time. Deborah, okay. Are you familiar with Dylan Mulvaney?
The trans model.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Who was, yeah.
So Dylan Mulvaney is all over the news because, so let's see, Bud Light
is
backlash for featuring trans influencer Dylan Mulvaney in latest campaign. Bud Light has ignited controversy by partnering with transgender influencer Dylan Mulvaney for their latest campaign. The 26-year-old announced the collaboration on social media during the NCAA March Madness tournament. Do you think this is a smart marketing campaign for the March Madness tournament and that fan base?
I do not.
Yeah.
I do not.
It's so crazy. We have the videos here. Okay, are you watching?
Oh, is this the ad?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't seen it.
Okay, so let's make this clear. This is not an advertisement. They're not an official like spokesperson. They're an influencer. So they make social media posts, TikToks, whatever, and they include, I don't know how it works. They get paid by brands to be a brand ambassador, but not right. Like spokes. They're not like, but Bud Light made a can with this guy's face on it. And it says celebrating 365 days of womanhood. This guy's he's a very shady character. There's footage of him when he was still calling himself a man on, and he was on The Price is Right.
Uh-huh.
Just acting like he's just a clown and just acting really, really gay. And, you know, there's people that are extra flamboyant out there, but it just all seemed like a clown show. And I don't know. It just seems kind of offensive that this is what is being revered as like womanhood these days. So this is a video of Dylan Mulvaney in a bubble bath with a bunch of Bud Lights behind him. Adam Curry from No Agenda talked about this when it first happened. And he was like, there's no way this is real. This isn't real. Everybody's getting fooled by this. And then had to issue a mea culpa on the next episode because I was wrong. He's like, I was wrong. This is fully real. And he made the original Budweiser webpage back in the 90s. He was like a tech guy. So he got the contract to build their website. And he came up, do you remember they had, Budweiser had this thing called the born on date.
Mm-mm.
So it would say on the can when the beer was made to ensure that you're getting fresh beer, you know?
Okay.
And he said he proposed this to whichever Augustus, they're all Augustus Bush's first, second, third, fourth, fifth, whichever one was in control at the time. He proposed it to them and they were like, no. No way that we're putting the website on the can. This is the 90s, you know? when it wasn't like websites everywhere. Adam Curry proposed that they put, you know, www.budweiser.com on the can. And he's like, there's no way we're desecrating our sacred, you know,
oh my God,
can like this. Cause they were so, I mean, it's an iconic logo, the Budweiser logo, and they didn't want to do it. And then I guess he said like Coke and Pepsi started doing it. So they caved and did it. But so he could not believe that this is actually real when it came out. But okay, let's get into the ad.
Good Lord.
Is this what women do? Do you do this in a bathtub?
Well, he has a bra on. I don't bathe with my bra on, and I also don't play with the bubbles, and no. And we're not even halfway through it yet.
Yeah. You have a big mouth.
Oh my God.
Hi. Impressive carrying skills, right? I got some Bud Lights for us. So, I kept hearing about this thing called March Madness, and I thought we were all just having a hectic month, but it turns out it has something to do with sports. And I'm not sure exactly which
Billy,
sport,
woman,
but
women
either
don't
way,
know
it's a cause to celebrate.
Sports.
This month, I celebrated my day 365 of womanhood, and Bud Light sent me possibly the best gift ever, a can with my face on it. Check out my Instagram story to see how you can enjoy March Madness with Bud Light and maybe win some money, too. Love ya! Cheers! Go team! Whatever team you love, I love, too. Okay. Love.
Okay, so that's the end of the Bud Light campaign that they did. The next one is, I guess people are all up in arms about this, boycotting Bud Light. I'll show you the Kid Rock video soon.
Oh, I saw, I didn't see it. I read about it, but he shot him up.
But he also does some brand ambassadorship for Nike's women's workout apparel, sports bras and leggings. So we'll see that. This is, that's coming up.
Okay. Break a leg. Woo!
Okay, that's that.
Is that?
I like the music.
Was that all? Maybe you should change it for make it our theme song.
Yeah.
Is that a another online ambassador thing? Not on TV. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. 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 It's like not like a commercial on TV, but it's just so weird how this person has risen to stardom. Like this person went and interviewed Joe Biden.
Really?
In the White House, yeah.
I'd never heard of him until this Bud Light stuff came up.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, it's it seems kind of like they've sold their soul to do all this and make a bunch of money, and you know.
Yeah, I don't think that it's going to backfire.
I don't think the end is going to be kind. To this
yeah,
person.
I don't think that Bud Light is going to gain any fans.
Yeah, what was the last time you had a Bud Light?
I don't think I ever have. Never, I was never a beer drinker.
Never once in your life, huh?
I like that tub. I do not recall ever. I mean, I remember having a Corona.
Yeah.
And I remember having a Miller.
I've definitely seen you put back some booze, but I've never seen you drink a beer. The only time that I would ever have sought out buying Bud Light was if I was going to be doing a lot of cocaine, and I wanted something that had very little flavor that I could just drink like 100 of. That's when I would buy a 24 pack of Bud Light, but that is a different lifetime, and I can't even remember, you know, how that felt. Thank God.
Next, we're gonna have truck commercials.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it'd be interesting to see how many, because I mean, Budweiser has a loyal fan base. You know, I love Budweiser. I love regular Budweiser in the can. I didn't like bottles. I would always buy that stuff or get it at the bar. It's going to be interesting to see how many people would actually boycott it. I thought I had the Kid Rock video on here, but I guess I don't. Everybody's probably already seen it. There's a video of Kid Rock, and he says, you know, F Budweiser, or F Anheuser-Busch, and then shoots up a bunch of Bud Light with a automatic weapon. Kid Rock is lucky enough to be wealthy enough to afford an automatic weapon. You can get machine guns still, Deborah. You just have to pay a bunch of money to the ATF to get them. And he apparently has them. So, yeah. That's that story. And it just seemed like, you know, it's the same thing to me as this whole Trump indictment thing. It's just another thing to divide people, to get people upset about the other side and to think something's happening that's not really happening, all this stuff like that, you know?
Yep.
That's what it seems
like. What do you think of the three Democrats in Tennessee that got ousted from the House of Representatives?
I did not hear about that.
You want to know? You want me to? I have a little.
I heard piece about on that. I heard about the, like, the spokeswoman who got fired for making the, like, the comment about how trans people need to be, like, armed or fight back or something like
that. Oh God! No, I didn't. Know. No, I didn't hear about that.
What do you got?
Well, okay. Tennessee House Republicans expel two Democrats over gun control protest. And this was in Tennessee, which is in Nashville, where the Covenant School was. And there was that shoot up last week.
Yeah, a bunch of three children, three staff.
Three adults, yeah.
School were murdered by a trans mass shooter.
A former student.
Yeah,
also.
Male to female. Female to male shooter.
No, male to female.
Nope.
He goes by Audrey.
It's a girl who acts like a boy.
No.
Yes, it is.
Oh, I thought it was the reverse, but
nope.
You could be right.
No.
Okay. So anyway, representatives Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, who both happen to be Black, I don't know what that has to do with anything, were ousted. The vote was 72-25 and 69-26. And the third person involved, Gloria Johnson, who just happens to be white, was short one vote. And so she gets to retain her seat. So the three are accused of violating House rules of decorum. They took over the speaking podium to lead chants with a crowd protesting the lack of action by lawmakers on gun violence after the six people were killed at the Covenant School. So that's where I got that off of Fox. And then I went over to look at, this was from Free Story. So I went to look at what the left had to say about this. And interesting, a media called Raw Story, which is left-leaning, had exact same story. So
it was anyway, like an AP story or something like that.
Yeah, word for word. So going on, there's this conservative guy, Charlie Sykes, who denounced the move as political malpractice and vindictive retaliation. And then I, you know, dug a little deeper and I found a Twitter post by Team USA. I'm not on Twitter, so I'm not familiar with all this stuff. And there was a photo of Trump wearing a MAGA hat. That doesn't mean that this was written by Trump, but it was. And this person tweeted, "The Tennessee Republican Party is a model for the nation. Excellent job today." And then somebody else by the name of Anita Wadwani tweeted, "Okay, so now the expulsion hearings." She quoted an attorney by the name of J.R. Clemmings, is trying to make the point that the video the GOP just showed was in direct, was in direct violation of a House rules disallowing members to shoot video on the floor. Are we going to punish all of them as well? And then the response to that was that, you know, people on the floor were videoing when they're not supposed to. The response by the clerk was, it was not a violation because a video was taken while the House was in recess. And then Clemmings says in response to this, then the three Democrat members, conduct was also during a recess.
Hmm.
So evidently they can be voted back in, but there's a lot of noise going on about how they were standing up for gun control and that they got ousted. And
yeah, it's a fun story. Yeah, it's very strange. As soon as these things happen, well, it's not strange that you know, politicians use it on both sides for political means, you know, this tragedy. Three little kids died, you know?
Yeah.
Really sad. And you know, if you do this, it's crazy. Like, speaking of all this trans stuff, if you boil down what percentage of the population the trans community is and how many mass shootings are responsible for, they're the most prolific mass shooters.
Trans?
Yeah.
Really?
Percentage wise, yeah.
Wow.
Per capita. They all, all the most recent ones have been some sort of, you know, the Uvalde, this one that just happened, the YouTube campus. Remember that one?
Hmm. Not well enough, no.
In San Jose.
But there, you make the point, and there was another potential shooter who they were able to stop before.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And I don't believe any of this is authentic. I think this is, you know, I think there are ones that are organic, if you want to call it that. But I think most of these people are, you know, to get super conspiratorial, I think they're Manchurian candidate type deals, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're all on SSRIs. It's just so crazy that this trans thing is like the main thing that's in the news now. And it's you can tell these people are being the activists and things like that, and the college campuses and the people that were doing all that got activated to do the BLM stuff after George Floyd by the media, mm-hmm. which is what happened, are acting the exact same way on college campuses with the whole trans stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. And you saw it in 2020 in the summer of love, summer of the fentanyl riots. And, you know, we saw that guy in Tennessee, wherever it was, get murdered, that black guy get murdered by five cops. Like, that was way worse than the George Floyd death. And like, why weren't they activated for that? You know,
uh-huh.
It goes to show that the media can make it happen. And you know, whoever they take their orders from. And yeah, you're seeing all this stuff like that they're right after they were going to do this, they were having the Trans Day of Vengeance. You hear about that? Like,
No.
yeah, it's supposed to be at the Capitol. And they just had a big one in San Francisco, the Trans Youth Day and stuff like that. And there's this guy, Billboard Chris, I think is his name, and he's made a name for himself. He just walks around Canada with a sandwich board on, like he's opposed to transitioning children. And he just got like beat up in front of the cops in Vancouver, British Columbia, and the cops are just like, oh, you're inciting violence with your sign. You got beat up by some guy in women's clothes, some big dude, and you see this stuff, some girl from Turning Point just got like chased out of some college campus while the cops like watched. And it's so strange that this is the thing that's being pushed now. And I don't know. It's very, very, very disturbing. But speaking of that, did you see right after that shooting Joe Biden's speech? It is
No.
insane. I heard it on a podcast and I thought, remember when like that Chat GPT thing came up of him like talking about like what's going to happen to the trans person? That was pretty bad. Remember that? Like
Yeah,
the
vaguely.
yeah. Well, I thought this was Chat GPT for sure. It's hard to find it. I looked I tried to look it up. You can find a lot of people reacting to it videos, but not just like the straight video you can't find anymore. So I found a little of it and I'll play it for you. This is his press conference after that shooting,
Okay.
in response to that shooting.
My name is Joe Biden. I'm Dr. Joe Biden's husband. And I ate Jenny's ice cream, chocolate chip. I came down because I heard there was chocolate chip ice cream. By the way, I have a whole refrigerator full upstairs. I think I'm kidding. I'm not. God. Ben, how are you, pal? One of the best guys in the United States Congress, Ben Cardin. Folks, welcome to the White House.
What do you think of that?
Is he auditioning to be a comedian?
I mean,
That was his opening statement regarding.
yes. Yes. Isn't that
What did
insane?
that's, I mean, insensitive?
It was super quiet. I wish it would have been louder. Yeah, and I hate to do it. I hate to be the guy. What if Donald Trump did that?
Yeah, I don't know why I haven't heard about that.
Because it's insane and it makes him look like he's mentally retarded and not able to do his job, which we've all been saying since 2019, that you didn't even know about because you were watching CNN. I've got it.
That's
It was super quiet on my end. Could you hear it all right?
yeah, I could hear
Okay. And then I wish it would have gone further because after that he says there's four kids in the back. Those are some good looking kids. So I heard that. I didn't watch any video of it. I just heard it for the first time. I'm like, that this is crazy. This is so funny, like that somebody made this and I found out that it was real. Okay, here's the transcript. I'll read it. My name is Joe Biden. I'm Dr. Jill Biden's husband. I eat Jenny's ice cream, chocolate chip. I came down because I heard there was chocolate chip ice cream. By the way, I have a whole refrigerator full upstairs. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. Biden was heard saying in the video.
Was that wasn't in Nashville, was it?
No, I think it was in the White House.
Yeah, that's what he said. But when he said I came down, I was thinking, shit, if he went down.
No,
to
he
Nashville,
came down from or, I
mean, from up high.
From where he takes naps and he's ice cream. He's got a whole refrigerator full. But isn't that wild?
Pathetic.
Yeah.
It's pathetic.
I mean, it's the poor guy shouldn't be doing what he's doing. Hmm. And, you know, he didn't, I mean, he made that, I don't know if he was just going off the cuff on that one or if that was a speech written for him. He obviously doesn't know what happened. So people are either trying to set him up or he's supposed to be reading something else and he's just uncontrollable. There's also this video, I should have looked it up. They played it on OBDM of his like handler who's mic'd, like, you know, walking around with him. And he's like, okay, we're going to come down the stairs. There's a blue mark over there. And a couple steps to your left, and that's where you're gonna stand. And yeah, it's wild. But we don't need these. These octogenarians need to just go take naps and enjoy life till the end. You know, eat chocolate chip ice cream all you want. You might as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That was very, very, very surprising to me. I remember a couple episodes ago, I found his Vice article, and it was called The Child Rape Assembly Line. Very disturbing.
Yes.
And it was about Orthodox Judaism. It was like some Orthodox Jewish guy who was, you know, exposing child rape within Orthodox Judaism. And I don't want to like just single them out because I'm critical of Israel, because it happens in every single organized religion. You know, nobody is exempt from it. It's horrible. But I had it, I found that article, I emailed it to myself, I had it in my email still left over. So I was like, oh, maybe we can cover that. I went to my email today to get my tabs ready for the show. I was able to pull it up and read it, and now it's a 404. Doesn't uh-huh. exist. You know what 404 is, right?
Yeah, it does.
Doesn't exist.
Not
anymore.
Found. Yeah.
Look, got pulled.
Wow.
Very interesting, huh?
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm talking ahead of ourselves right now, but how far are you in the book that we're reading together?
50 pages in. How about you?
Oh my God. Yeah. It just continues on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah. I'm excited to get out of the pedophilia section and get into some actual serial killer stuff. When does that happen?
Yeah. I'm not there yet. And I'm probably 150 pages in.
Oh, wow.
And
we're going to go
yeah.
on a ghost show, My Third Eye. And we're going to do mm-hmm. some, serial killer stuff, so we should brush up, and I'll try to get caught up to you in that book. But I thought we could end out the episode talking about the Ripper Crew a little bit. I told you about these guys.
Yes, and I
this
did look
a
them
relatively,
up
I heard William Ramsey talking about him before, and you know what a name, the Ripper Crew. It sounds very ominous, but they're a very prolific, unknown, satanic serial killer cult that was operating in Chicago in the early 1980s. Did you do any research on them?
I looked them up after you mentioned them. Yes, I did.
I listened to some podcasts on them. It's really hard trying to like listen to true crime stuff through podcasts, because there's so many true crime podcasts and so many of them are the same formula and they're not very good. And I hate that formula. It's just that like kind of like make joke, be funny type deal.
Mm-hmm.
William Ramsey's was talking. There's this woman, Roberta Glass, who does the True Crime Report. We should have her on, see if we can get her. But they were talking about like My Favorite Murder.
Uh-huh.
Said like, William Ramsey like heard her on an heard them on an episode that he was listening to, and then went and looked at the Wikipedia page for that case, and they just read the Wikipedia verbatim. So I've got it pulled up here, the Ripper Crew in the Book of Knowledge here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just going to kind of read a little bit about these guys from Wikipedia and let everybody know. I listened to, there's this guy, Dan Cummins. He has this podcast called Time Suck. He's a comedian. I don't really like his podcast very much, but I listened to it about the Ripper Crew. And it was good and informative. And then he spends like the last 20 minutes like being an apologetic for the, like, for Satanists. Being like, oh, these guys aren't real Satanists. Real Satanists don't promote violence or even believe in Satan. They're more like just do as thou wilt, you know. It's weird how he like made that a very, very large part of, you know, the podcast, a podcast for Satanists. But so the Ripper Crew, or the Chicago Rippers, was a satanic cult and organized crime group composed of serial killers, cannibals, rapists, and necrophiles. Robin Gecht and three associates, Edward Spreitzer and brothers Andrew and Thomas Cocorellis. They were suspected in the disappearances of 17 women in Illinois in 1981 and 82. So very prolific, very a whole bunch of, it's like 22 months and they got like 18 victims or something like that. As well as the unrelated, I don't know why they say the unrelated fatal shooting of a man in a random drive-by shooting. Seems related to me if they killed him. According to one of the detectives who investigated the case, Gecht made Manson look like a Boy Scout. You know, Manson didn't even commit the murders that the Manson's family is famous for. So thanks, Wikipedia. The gang's first victim was 28-year-old Linda Sutton, who was abducted on May 23rd, 1981. 10 days later, her body was found in a field in Villa Park, Illinois. Her body had been mutilated and her left breast amputated. It was almost a year before the gang struck again. On May 15th, 1982, they abducted Lorraine Borowski just as she was about to open the realtor's office where she worked. Her body was discovered 5 months later in a cemetery in Clarendon Hills. On May 29th, they abducted Shui Mack from Hanover Park, a village northwest of Villa Park. Her body was not found for 4 months. 2 weeks after they abducted Mack, they picked up Angel York in their van, handcuffed her, and slashed her breast before throwing her in the van, throwing her out of the van still alive. York's description of her attackers failed to produce any leads. So they were like cutting these women's breasts off with piano wire and like having sex with the holes.
Oy vey.
Yeah. The gang did not strike again for 2 months. On August 28, 1982, the body of Sandra Delaware was discovered on the bank of the Chicago River. She had been stabbed, strangled, and her left breast amputated. On September 8th, 31-year-old Rose Davis was found in an alley, having suffered almost identical injuries as Delaware. On October 6, 1982, the gang shot 28-year-old Rafael Tirado, a local drug dealer, and his friend 18-year-old Alberto Rosario at a phone booth in a random drive-by shooting. According to Spreitzer, he was driving with Gecht when the older man told him to slow down. Gecht took two guns from the back of the car, told Spreitzer to stop the car, and then opened fire on Tirado and Rosario, hitting both of them. Rosario survived his injuries while Tirado succumbed to his injuries at a hospital. A month later, the gang committed their last crime. The victim, Beverly Washington, was found by a railroad track on December 6. In addition to other injuries, her left breast had been amputated and her right breast was severely slashed. She survived the attack and was able to give descriptions of her attackers in the van they had used to abduct her. The men were suspects in the disappearance of Carol Pappas, wife of Chicago Cubs pitcher Milt Pappas. I didn't know about that. She disappeared on September 11, 1982. Her body was recovered 5 years later, and the death ruled an accident. So it goes on and on. They were all, it's, there was weird convictions. Like the guy, Robin Gecht, never got convicted of murder. It wasn't even charged with murders, but they were able to stick some other like rapes and stuff on him. So he like went away forever. And one of these guys, Coccarellis, is actually was released and is out on parole now. Yeah, it'd be fun to look into this one a little bit more, maybe do a full episode on the Chicago Rippers. What do you think?
Yeah, sounds gruesome.
Yeah, pretty gruesome. But it's interesting because they're kind of not known, but they were operating in Chicago at the same time as guess who?
82.
John Wayne Gacy.
Maybe
he was done by then. I'm not sure if they overlapped. But, you know, they probably did many more than these 18. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that's when he was operating. He wasn't killing women, though. He was into the...
He's killing boys.
Boys. So, yeah, I think we might hang it up there, Deborah. What do you think?
On that note. Yeah, let's all just be civil.
Yeah. Don't kill people. Don't cut anybody's tits off. Just, you know,
be civil.
Go out and do some work and don't pay attention. Listen to our show. We'll keep you informed on what you need to know and live life. It's so much happier. Listen to books on tape. It's nice.
Mm-hmm.
But after I did kind of a heavy episode yesterday, and I want to thank everybody who reached out and sent me really nice messages. I'm working on responding to all of you. So if I haven't responded yet, I'll do my best to get around to it, but just know that I've read everybody's messages and they mean a lot to me. So thank you.
Well deserved. Very much well deserved.
All right, guys. Well, this is going to do it for this episode. I think we're going to be back on Sunday for a Patreon, Deborah, if you're around.
That is Easter. I am around.
Okay.
You'll have to let me know.
Okay, it's not Easter for me, and it's and you're Jewish, so it doesn't matter.
So it's not Easter for me either.
Celebrating Jesus, and we're the ones that killed him. You know, is
that? Oh God!
All right, I love you so much, Deborah. Thank you for being here.
I love you, Adam.
All right, bye.
Bye.